are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Denver Metro News, read by Matthew Bell. Today we will be reading the following main articles: bakeries, breweries, Broncos. Denver is getting creative with local grains. Locals among riot, cases pardoned by Trump, and students pitch in to help Ukraine. And following up with miscellaneous articles. Denver Herald, week of January 30th, 2025. Starts with a photo of hands holding a loaf of bread. Caption says, an artisan design on a product of Rebel Bread, which has been using Colorado-grown grains since at least last year. Bakeries, breweries, Broncos. Denver is getting creative with local grains. Colorado-grown milled flours come to forefront of food scene by Merrill Fair, special to Colorado Community Media. Devin Jamroz knows there is something special about the white wheat variety known as India Jammu that is grown in Colorado. The CEO of the company, Dry Storage in Boulder, said the grain made its way to the Front Range after being pulled from a seed vault in 2020 and passed into the hands of local baker Andy Clark at Moxie Bread Co. in Louisville. Clark milled some, but got so excited over the bread it produced that he handed it off to the MASA Seed Foundation in Boulder, where it wound up with several local farmers and eventually to Dry Storage as they were putting together their inventory of local grains. We launched it, Indian Jammu, a month ago, and we're getting it into more chefs and bakers' hands to play with, Jamroz said. It could potentially change the game and change the narrative around the usability of single-variety stone-milled flours because it is just so easy to use. While Colorado is known to grow high-protein winter wheat due to the temperature fluctuation and a relatively short growing season, Jamroz said that more than 80% of the wheat grown in the state is shipped elsewhere. Local grains can be expensive compared to commodity flour and more challenging to work with due to their unique characteristics, but the appeal of local sourcing along with heightened nutrition and taste has been bringing regional flour back to Denver's food scene. Launched with a mission of bringing local grains back into the supply chain, James Beard, award-nominated Chef Kelly Whitaker, and IDEST Hospitality founded Dry Storage in 2019 to create a product they were struggling to find in the local market. Following a successful trial with six local farms in the San Luis Valley, Dry Storage has partnered with local farms using regenerative and organic practices, milling their wheat and distributing distributing the flour to a growing number of regional partners, along with operating a cafe, grain mill, and bakery based in Boulder. Article continues with a photo of a grain mill. Caption reads, Golden Prairie Organics cleaning white Sonoran wheat in Nunn, Colorado. Photos courtesy of Dry Storage. The second one shows a large field. Caption reads, India Jammu grown at Full Circle Farms in Longmont. Continuing the article. Similarly to many mass-produced staples, such as coffee, modern mills can produce large quantities of commodity flour with a consistent flavor profile, enabling identical products to be created anywhere. Stone mills, like the one used by Dry Storage, don't strip away as many nutrients, maintaining the grain's unique flavor profile. There's an undeniable taste of Colorado, Jamroz said. You can tell the difference between wheat that's been grown here and grown elsewhere. Rebel Bread on South Broadway has had the unique experience of transitioning its beloved neighborhood baked goods to new recipes derived entirely from local grains. Since beginning to work with Dry Storage in 2023, the small batch artisan bakery initially introduced the Sonoran sandwich loaf from a variety of Colorado rye flour and has incorporated it into the popular favorites such as the charcuterie sourdough, kimchi squash, and cheddar sourdough, and the Nana G sourdough. After operating the bakery for a few years, we learned how important flour sourcing could be, both for the nutrition of the product as well as for the role that we then play in local economies and sustainable agriculture, said Zach Martinucci, founder and baker at Rebel Bread. As a baker, Martinucci said, working with a single variety of flour produced from a local mill makes for a more intentional process all around, as the bakery has to pay closer attention to the nuances in the flour. We have to pay attention to hydration, the amount of water we're adding, and our fermentation reactions are more active. They happen more quickly, Martinucci said. The depth of flavor is incredible, and the product tastes fresher. It tastes like we baked it earlier. Perfecting the new recipe was an undertaking as Rebel Bread sought to come up with a finished product that tasted the same, if not better, than their original loaves. Despite the challenge, a transition to local grains can present for existing businesses, Martinucci says he's been excited to see more businesses in the Denver metro area like Odell's Bagels embracing local grains from day one. Serving Denver's Highland neighborhood, out of the old Denver Bread Company building on Irving Street, Odell's Bagel has embraced the use of locally sourced grains along with other ingredients since opening its doors in October. I have always strived to use local ingredients, and when we opened this place, that was not going to change, Chef Miles Odell said. It's nice to know where our grains are coming from and that our farmers are being supported. It's a small ecosystem that is sustainable. Since launching the bagel shop, Odell's has been whipping up an assortment of hand-rolled and naturally fermented bagels. Along with the use of local grains, the shop focuses on incorporating as many locally sourced ingredients as possible, such as seasonal jams, currently offering a plum jam, and will soon be moving into marmalades for the winter citrus season. The use of local grains not only aligned with Odell's philosophy as a chef, but he said it enabled the shop to deliver a delicious locally derived product with a unique taste. It's impossible to replicate the flavor we're going after if we're not using these grains, Odell said. This is not an East Coast bagel. We made the recipe and we bake them here. It's a Denver-style bagel. The enthusiasm for a more local taste has been working its way onto the heart of Denver, fueling the over 100 restaurants, including 6 Michelin star restaurants that use dry storage as grain, along with bakeries, pizza shops, breweries, and distilleries. New Image Brewing in Arvada is currently experimenting with local wheat for their core beer recipes, while a scratch kitchen at the Empower Field is chefing up pancakes sourced from local wheats for the Denver Broncos. Because locally sourced wheat can come at a higher price than commodity flour, Jamroz said, accessibility is an integral aspect of their operations. They are currently working on a pilot program with the Cherry Creek School District to provide a monthly cinnamon roll breakfast with whole wheat flour, made especially for the schools, receiving positive feedback from students. With more businesses experimenting with local wheat, this year the mill saw its first renovations since opening. But Jamroz said moving forward, dry storage will have to be creative about how they scale to stay true to their local focused mission. He emphasized that dry storage's mission statement of grain is our medium for change is much bigger than the mill's operations in Colorado, but indicative of an alternative method of food production that values local products and producers. The idea would be to start opening new facilities in different regions that are big enough to produce a competitively priced flour, but each being region-specific and working with a network of local farmers, Jamroz said. We're leaning into local grain economies and the unique wheat that can be grown in different places around the country. Locals among riot cases pardoned by Trump. Government reverses course on prosecutions for Jan 6 insurrection by Ellis Arnold and Jane Reuter. eArnold@ColoradoCommunityMedia.com. Within hours after his second inauguration, President Donald Trump moved to pardon or drop the cases of people charged in relation to the riot at the United States Capitol on January 6, 2021, and Jefferson County and Douglas County men are among them. Patrick Montgomery, 52, of the Roxborough area, had been sentenced to prison after he pleaded guilty to assaulting law enforcement during the breach of the Capitol. A news release from the Federal Department of Justice said, a Kittredge man, Jeffrey Sabol, S-A-B-O-L, had been sentenced to prison on 3 felonies for offenses tied to the Capitol breach. Matthew Melson had been arrested for allegedly assaulting law enforcement officers and other charges amid the breach of the Capitol. A news release from the Federal Department of Justice said, Melson is described as a Wheat Ridge resident in the release. The riot disrupted a joint session of Congress that convened to ascertain the count and count the electoral votes related to the 2020 presidential election. Trump's action, dated January 20 this year, marked a broad reversal in this government's approach to the Capitol riot. In all, Trump pardoned, commuted the prison sentences of, or vowed to dismiss the cases of a vast number of people charged with crimes in the Capitol riot, including people convicted of assaulting police officers, the Associated Press reported. In the years since the incident, more than 1,500 people had been charged in nearly all 50 states. Related to the breach of the Capitol on October 2024, Justice Department news release said, here's a look at the cases with local ties. Douglas County man. According to court documents, on the morning of January 6, 2021, Montgomery and two others met at the Yours Truly Hotel in Washington, D.C. and walked to an area near the Washington Monument and the Ellipse to hear the speakers at the Stop the Steal rally, a Department of Justice release says. The release lays out more details. After the rally, the three men made their way to the west front of the Capitol building, crossing over inside the restricted perimeter. About 2 p.m., Montgomery grabbed a law enforcement officer's baton and attempted to wrestle it away from the officer. The officer held onto the baton and fell to the ground with Montgomery. The two then attempted to wrestle control of the baton from each other while other men watched nearby. During the scuffle, Montgomery kicked the police officer in the chest. After that incident, Montgomery and his two companions ascended the upper West Terrace stairs with a mass of individuals and approached the upper West Terrace door. As they approached, the exterior double doors were propped open. People were screaming and a loud alarm sounded as people were streaming into the Capitol building. The three men entered the Senate gallery, where they saw another rioter jump down to the Senate floor. The three men left the gallery and proceeded to the second floor to an area near the Senate floor where they confronted a U.S. Capitol police officer. One of the men other than Montgomery yelled at the officer, quote, this is not about us. This is bigger than me. It's bigger than you. It's about this. Blank. Everyone's right to self-government. We're with you guys. You think these people in this building would fight for you? End quote. Montgomery yelled, quote, you gotta stop doing your job sometime and start being American. You gotta quit doing your job and be an American, unquote. After that confrontation, the defendants exited the Capitol building at about 2:50 p.m. The FBI arrested Montgomery on January 17, 2021 in Colorado. During national news coverage, video footage that appeared to be captured on mobile devices of people at the scene depicted evidence of violations of local and federal law, including scores of individuals inside the Capitol building without authority to be there, according to the arrest document filed in federal court. On January 7, 2021, the FBI received several tips from the public that Montgomery was seen in photographs posted on Facebook inside the Capitol's Senate chambers on January 6th. The document says, Montgomery had been sentenced to 37 months in prison and 36 months of supervised release by U.S. District Judge Randolph D. Moss. The sentencing occurred on October 31st, 2024. See further details. Community Media's story online, tinyurl.com/Douglas Pardon. Kittredge Man. A U.S. District Judge sentenced Sable, S-A-B-O-L, in March 2024 to 63 months in prison and ordered him to pay $32,000 in restitution. The felony charges were obstruction of an official proceeding and aiding and abetting federal robbery, assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers with a deadly or dangerous weapon, and aiding and abetting. According to the Associated Press, Sable ripped a baton from an officer's hands before pulling another officer into the crowd outside the Capitol, allowing other rioters to assault the officer with weapons. Less than a year ago, in March 2024, Sable told U.S. District Judge Rudolph Contreras that he knows he is, quote, 100% guilty, and would have apologized directly to the officers whom he attacked if they had attended the hearing, according to the AP. I accept whatever it is you hand me, the AP quoted Sable as saying. I'll be honest, I deserve it. More details at tinyurl.com/Kittredge Pardon. Wheatridge Man. According to court documents, on January 6, 2021, about 2:15 p.m., police body-worn camera footage captured a man, later identified as Melson, as he arrived at the bike rack barricade separating a crowd of rioters from the Capitol building, according to a news release. The release lays out more details. Melson allegedly reached over the barricades and pushed a Metropolitan Police Department officer. The officer responded by pushing the man away from the barricades and into the crowd. Melson then allegedly charged the officer with both hands outstretched and pushed the officer in the chest. The man was again pushed back toward the crowd and was sprayed with OC spray, an aspirant reference to oleoresin capsicum, or pepper spray. Nelson then allegedly moved back into the crowd of rioters away from the police line. Later, he was allegedly seen in an open-source video as he climbed onto the inaugural stage scaffolding erected on the West Plaza of Capitol Grounds. Based on review of public video, closed-circuit video footage, and police body-worn camera footage depicting the events at the Capitol on January 6, 2021, law enforcement identified an individual who allegedly assaulted an officer on the West Plaza, according to an arrest document filed in federal court. The document lays out further details and allegations. The FBI posted a photo of the individual at the Capitol under the name 375-AFO and requested help from the public to identify the individual. Law enforcement identified 375-AFO as Melson. The government moved to dismiss the indictment against Melson in a court filing dated January 21st this year, citing to the executive order dated January 20th, 2025, granting pardons and commutation of sentences for certain offenses relating to the events at or near the United States Capitol on January 6, 2021, as the reason. Further details at tinyurl.com/JeffCoPardon. Whether riot was violent. In the years since the January 6th riot, disputes have played out in the public sphere about the extent to which it was a peaceful gathering. The Justice Department has said that rioters assaulted about 140 police officers on January 6th, the AP reported. A Senate report details how officers on the front line suffered chemical burns, brain injuries, and broken bones, among other injuries after fighting the attackers, who quickly overwhelmed them and broke into the building, the AP reported. That report includes a statement from the Capitol Police Labor Committee recounting some of the more serious injuries. I have officers who were not issued helmets prior to the attack who have sustained brain injuries. One officer has 2 cracked ribs and 2 smashed spinal discs. One officer is going to lose his eye, and another was stabbed with a metal fence stake. The AP's review of hundreds of videos and photos from the riot shows scores of people mixed in the crowd who were wearing military-style gear, including helmets, body armor, rucksacks, and two-way radios. See more detail from the AP at tinyurl.com/APCapitalReview. In the years since January 6, 2021, more than 1,532 individuals had been charged in nearly all 50 states for crimes related to the breach of the Capitol, including more than 571 individuals charged with assaulting or impeding law enforcement. A felony on October 2024, Justice Department news release says. A photograph of Donald Trump accompanies this article, captioned, Colorado residents are among the roughly 1,500 defendants in the January 6, 2021 United States Capitol riot, pardoned by newly inaugurated President Donald Trump. Duo with Highlands Ranch ties. A father and son with local ties are also among those who were sentenced in relation to the Capitol breach. The FBI interviewed David Tyner outside of his residence in Highlands Ranch. Tyner stated that he and his son Christian drove from Colorado to Washington, D.C. on January 5th, 2021, and woke up on January 6th and went to the rally and speech at the Ellipse. According to a document filed in federal court, law enforcement conducted a review of Capitol footage, open source materials that had been submitted to the FBI, and records maintained by the state of Colorado, according to the document. Both David Tyner and Christian Tyner pleaded guilty, and they were adjudicated guilty in disorderly conduct in a Capitol building and parading, demonstrating or picketing in a Capitol building. David Tyner was sentenced to probation for 36 months, and Christian Tyner was sentenced to probation for 24 months, according to a 2024 judgment documents. In a letter addressed to a judge, filed in court, David Tyner said he expressed, quote, my sincerest regrets for the abhorrent and misguided decisions I made and subsequent actions I took during the Capitol riot, unquote. Quote, one thing that's clear is that I was deceived. I should say, I allowed myself to be deceived, unquote, Tyner's letter said. My sense of patriotism to the country I love was exploited by former President Donald Trump attempting to cling to power he lost in a free and fair election. A list of other Coloradans accused in relation to the Capitol breach is located online at tinyurl.com/ColoradoJan6. Students pitch in to help Ukraine. There are two photographs accompanying this article. The first one is captioned, Interact Club students from Mountain Vista High School and Mountain Ridge Middle School work with the Highlands Ranch Rotary Club to assemble solar panels with USB chargers that will be shipped to Ukraine. The second photo is captioned, Each solar panel is decorated with artwork. Many include Ukraine's flag and national flower, the sun, flower, which symbolizes peace, resilience, and hope. And the photos show students with solar panels. One solar panel painted yellow and blue to represent the Ukrainian flag. Local youths assemble solar panels for schools, hospitals, in war zone. By Haley Lena, hlena at coloradocommunitymedia.com. As a first-generation American, Broomfield resident Andy Lenick was steeped in the language and culture of Ukraine. His parents were political refugees who relocated to the United States after World War II to escape Russian occupation. Once he retired as an engineer, Lenick joined the Peace Corps and lived in Ukraine from 2017 to 2018, where he made numerous connections. Shortly after Lenick returned to the U.S., he began doing weekly Zoom calls with his friends in Ukraine. When the war started, I was still running these weekly calls, said Lenick. I was just devastated. I was gobsmacked. Ukraine's energy infrastructure targeted. For months, Russia grew its military presence along Ukraine's border, and on February 24, 2022, Russia's President Vladimir Putin launched a full-scale invasion on Ukraine in what he called a special military operation. Nearly a quarter of Ukraine's territory was seized within the first few weeks. However, Ukraine met Russian troops with resistance. I just kind of had a feeling, a gut feeling, that energy was going to become an issue, said Lenick, and it did. That fall, Russia launched a new strategy to destroy Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Ukraine's energy infrastructure is reliant on nuclear power, according to the International Energy Agency. Nearly half of the country's electricity is generated off nuclear power, followed by coal and gas-fired plants, all of which were damaged or occupied by Russian attacks. Experts from the Center for Strategic and International Studies reported that in less than a month after the invasion, about 10.7% of Ukraine's total energy production was eliminated as Russia captured one of the largest nuclear facilities in Europe, the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, which is located in southeastern Ukraine. In late August 2024, about 200 Russian missiles and drones caused millions of households to lose power. The Associated Press reported it was the 11th massive combined attack in Russia on Ukraine's energy infrastructure. The loss of power has made it difficult for many to communicate with loved ones, for hospital workers to communicate with first responders and treat patients in hospitals, and for educators and students to continue schooling. When the war started, Lenick's best friend in Ukraine told him, don't let the world forget about Ukraine. That's been sort of my motto, said Lenick. It's been tattooed onto my soul. The Solar Charger Project. Within the first couple of months of the war, while volunteering with a group called Ukrainians in Colorado, Lenick was contacted by Rich Stromberg, a professor at Western Colorado University in Gunnison, who is an expert in solar energy. Stromberg's class took used solar panels, put a piece of equipment on them, and converted them to four-port USB chargers. The panels were decorated with supportive messages, photos, and artwork, and brought to Lenick. Using the organization MEEST, M-E-E-S-T, which is Ukrainian for bridge, Lenick sent the first several panels that summer to one of the largest Rotary clubs in Western Ukraine. They were an immediate hit, said Lenick. A short video clip that I have actually shows the Rotarians going out. There's a light mist. It's not full sun. And this guy plugs in his phone and shows that it's charging. Terry Cohn and Zig Berzins, co-chairs of the Highlands Ranch Rotary Club, were overcome with emotion as they watched Lenick's presentation regarding the situation in Ukraine at a Rotary conference in September 2024. Literally in tears, watching children run to bomb shelters in the middle of class, said Cohn. Zig and I said, we need to do something about this. They met with Lenick, and shortly after, a grant from one of the Rotary members was made to fund solar panel projects. The club decided to order panels, which are 2x2 and a half feet, and wanted to get the community involved with a robust interact program, which is a Rotary program for middle and high school students. The Rotary Club held a multi-generational event at Mountain Vista High School in Highlands Ranch to put together panels for use as mobile device chargers. About 50 students split into groups and worked with Rotarians to assemble more than 20 panels. Speaking to the students about the importance of the panels, Lennox told them that they were all peace builders. "These messages of support are priceless," Lennox said. As students stripped wires, connected USB devices, and decorated the panels, they heard about the impact directly from Ukraine as Lennox held a Zoom call with Ukrainian Rotarians. Including the packaging and shipping, the total cost is around $125 per panel. The Rotary Club hopes to hold what Lennox calls a low-cost, high-impact project about four times a year. "The war is still going on," said Berzins. "Even if it ends tomorrow, they still won't have power. We've got to recognize that. Getting the infrastructure back into Ukraine is going to take some time." Seeing the impact. For a while, Lennox said he was a one-man show sending solar panels to Ukraine until he partnered with Sunflower Seeds Ukraine, a Boulder-based nonprofit dedicated to assisting civilians and defenders in Ukraine. Since the start of the project, about 600 panels that have been shipped to Ukraine, the president of the Rotary Club in Lutz, Ukraine, told Lennox that the panels not only helped charge phones and tablets, but also lanterns. "Panels have been distributed to defenders in Ukraine," Lennox said. He understands why some people wouldn't want to supply soldiers, but he felt the need to support as many Ukrainians as he can. "What the people in Ukraine will tell you is our military is made up of your uncle, your father, the baker, your neighbor," said Lennox. "This is not a professional army, and so I don't really put a restriction on it." Most recently, panels have been sent to universities in Ukraine where invincibility centers were set up so students and staff could have a opportunity to charge their phones. "It's been almost 3 years since the war in Ukraine began. Through it all, Lennox has held on to the words spoken by his best friend in Ukraine. Don't let the world forget about Ukraine." Next page has some advertising. Golden Real Estate. "Don't be misled by our name. We list and sell homes across the entire Metro Denver area. Jim Smith, broker owner. Jim@goldenrealestate.com. 1214 Washington Avenue. Golden 80401. Golden Real Estate. Hometown service delivered with integrity, promoting and modeling environmental responsibility. A professional home inspection is the best investment you can make in a home you buy. The importance of hiring..." by Jim Smith, Realtor. "The importance of hiring a professional home inspector can't be overstated. Whether you're buying a new home from a builder or an existing home, for any age. Many, perhaps most, readers understand that you know how the professional inspector works in the context of a signed purchase agreement. For others, let me answer your likely questions in hopes that some readers will benefit from this column. The questions below are from a consumer guide published by the National Association of Realtors, but the answers are all my own, based on over two decades of representing buyers in the purchase of both new and existing homes. What is a home inspection? Your inspector will be looking at every element of the home: the structure, the roof, the siding, the foundation, the flat work, that's driveway, walkways, basement, and garage slabs. Rainwater management, downspouts, gradient of earth next to the foundation, insulation, both walls and attic. Windows, doors, flooring, and ceilings. He, or rarely she, will test all appliances, including disposal, and run a cycle of the dishwasher and clothes washer. He'll test all faucets, making sure, for example, that hot is on the left, cold is on the right. He'll fill sinks in bathtubs enough to see whether they leak when drained. He'll flush toilets. He'll test light switches and outlets using a device which shows whether the hot or neutral polarity is correct and whether the outlet is grounded. Within 5 feet of any water source, he'll use the same device to see whether an outlet is ground fault protected as required by current building codes. If the home was built in the 1960s or 70s, he'll check to see if there is aluminum wiring. If so, he'll check whether the wiring has been pigtailed with copper. He'll inspect the breaker box. He'll look at the manufacturer's tags on the furnace, AC, and water heater. which will tell him the year of manufacture. If they're over 15 years old, he'll indicate that they are beyond their useful life. On the inspection report, suggesting that the buyer should demand replacement even if they're working fine. Your inspector is usually a generalist, and he'll recommend a secondary inspection by a specialist if, for example, he suspects the presence of asbestos or structural issues. Because we're in the Rocky Mountains, he will certainly recommend a test for radon gas using an electronic device that samples the air for the presence of radon gas once an hour for 48 hours. And he, as well as your agent, should always recommend a sewer scope to determine whether the sewer line from the house to the sewer main is damaged or simply requires cleaning. Are home inspections required? No. But any buyer would be ill-advised not to spend the few hundred dollars for a professional inspection, a radon test, and a sewer scope, given that any single issue that is uncovered could cost far more to mitigate than you spent to uncover it, and the buyer could reasonably expect the seller to agree to a repair, especially when it's a health or safety issue, as is often the case. That's why I wrote in the headline that an inspection is your best investment. Who performs the home inspection? Fortunately, there are national associations, e.g. NACHI, which certify home inspectors. Because the state of Colorado does not license or regulate home inspectors, which I have argued for in previous columns, radon inspection is regulated, and the person who installs the device must be licensed. Sewer inspectors are also not licensed. That said, however, your real estate agent, if he or she is not a newbie, probably has all kinds of specialists, including electricians and structural engineers, that he can recommend based on past experience with other buyers. Who is responsible for inspection costs? The state-mandated purchase contract says that inspection is the buyer's responsibility and expense. Sometimes a buyer will submit an inspection objection, which demands that the seller hire, for example, a licensed electrician to inspect the home and make any recommended repairs. But a seller should reject such a provision and remind the buyer that doing so is the buyer's responsibility and expense. Should a buyer attend the inspection? Absolutely. The inspector will provide a PDF detailing the results of the inspection, but there's no substitute for the buyer to attend the inspection so the inspector can explain any issues that he uncovers, but also show where utility turnoffs are located and answer other home buyer questions. How long does the home inspection take? A thorough home inspection should take at least 2 and usually 3 hours for a typical single-family home. A condo or townhome can be inspected in less time, and a large home could take longer, especially if there are outbuildings. When the inspector has finished his rounds, he will want to go over the key issues that he uncovered. He will have taken photos and possibly videos of the issues he uncovered, which will be included in the PDF he sends you and your agent that evening or the following day. Some inspectors now put their reports online, which has the benefit of including links to video clips. Some inspectors provide a 3-ring binder, which not only includes the printed report, but also useful homeowner advice about all aspects of maintaining the home year-round. What does it mean if a home is listed as is? I addressed this in my column 2 weeks ago, but let me repeat my comments. Yes, a seller may say up front that the home is sold as is and that they will not make any repairs. Or, to win a bidding war, the buyer may waive inspection in their purchase contract, but I consider both actions bogus, for the reason that the buyer will or should still conduct a professional inspection, and if a serious issue or two are uncovered, the buyer can still terminate the contract because of the condition. When notified, the seller will most likely want to salvage the contract by offering to make the necessary repair. Thus, the house was not sold as is after all. Or the buyer didn't really waive inspection objections. Subdivisions without an HOA can still have covenants. Covenants has been around for at least as long as subdivisions and probably longer. Not so long ago, covenants tended to focus more on racial discrimination than on controlling things like the minimum or maximum size of homes, the requirement to have grass and one tree in the front yard, etc. Nowadays, those old covenants which discriminated against people of color and/or Jews are illegal and can't be enforced, but there are covenants about those modern topics which can be enforced, but by whom? That's why homeowner associations, HOAs, were created. Not only do they provide services for which they charge dues, but they can enforce covenants plus their own rules and regulations to which homeowners must abide, and state law stands behind those enforcement powers. In fact, until last year, an HOA could actually foreclose on a member's home if they failed to pay fines for violations levied by the HOA. Now, an HOA can only foreclose on a member for unpaid dues. So let's say you are in a subdivision with no HOA. Yippee. But a neighbor is violating something in the covenants, such as parking their work truck on or an abandoned car in their driveway or on their front lawn. As the complaining neighbor, your only recourse is to sue the offending neighbor in civil court for violating the covenants that pertain to that home. Because of this cost and inconvenience associated with litigation, only egregious violations are likely to be enforced by one neighbor against another. Has this softened your attitude towards HOAs? A mini restaurant review. Rita and I have discovered a great Mexican restaurant, La Huacha. L-A, new word, H-U-A-C-H-A. Right under our noses, literally. The restaurant is on the corner of Rogers Street and South Golden Road on the first floor of GW Apartments. We live right above it. This restaurant began as a food truck 1/4 mile away, and now they occupy the space occupied briefly by Pancho and Jane, which didn't last long at all because it was just a bar with tacos. La Huacha is a full menu restaurant. See www.lahuacha.com and give it a try. It has a well-deserved rating of 4.9 on Yelp and elsewhere. I ordered their crispy chili rellenos and a tequila drink served in a carved-out pineapple, which they call piña loca. Yum. We want to help refugees of the California wildfires. If you know anyone who lost their home in the California wildfires who is thinking of relocating to the Denver area, we'd like to help them by rebating up to $10,000 of any commission we earn and using our connections to acquire and deliver donated furniture and furnishings for their new home. You can download this column from www.jimsmithcolumns.com and send it to them. Our broker associates and I look forward to serving them. Invite them to contact me or any of our broker associates listed below. And there is an inset. No other real estate brokerage provides all these benefits to buyers. We can create custom MLS alerts using search criteria not available on consumer websites. You'll have access to our in-house handyman at $30 an hour. We'll refer you to a trusted lender if you need a mortgage. We have the most experienced and qualified home inspectors looking for a sustainable or net zero energy home. This is an area of particular expertise at Golden Real Estate. Out of town, we'll FaceTime you from the listing or create a YouTube video tour and send you the link. We can counsel you on all things sustainable, heat pumps, solar panels, insulation, fire-resistant construction, etc. We'll work to have the seller, not you, compensate us. We know how to handle competitive situations and win bidding wars while letting you know whether you're paying more than you should. The next page has an advertisement for the DenverCenter.org. Advertising, new year, new plays. A gut-wrenching new comedy, world premiere, The Reservoir. January 17th through March 9th, Singleton Theater. The Reservoir by Jake Brash, directed by Shelley Butler in partnership and alliance with Alliance Theater and the Geffen Playhouse. This is called A Local Story. Also, a door-banging whodunit world premiere of The Suffragette's Murder, February 7th through March 9th at the Kilstrom Theater. The Suffragette's Murder by Sandy Rustin, directed by Margot Bordelon. We counted 9 Coloradans in Aspen for the X Games. A photograph of a ski jumper with a crowd behind him, captioned, Sevilla Irving from Winter Park catches some big air during the women's ski superpipe final at the 2024 X Games Aspen in Aspen by John Renfro, J. Renfro, R-E-N-F-R-O-W, at ColoradoCommunityMedia.com. The best extreme athletes in the world are descending on perhaps the globe's greatest outdoor playground for the X Games this past weekend. The X Games Aspen 2025, which kicked off January 23rd, featured men's and women's skiing and snowboarding at Buttermilk Mountain in the esteemed Colorado Winter Resort. Of over 100 athletes, we counted 9 from the Centennial State who competed in iconic snow sports, events such as the Superpipe, Slopestyle, and Knuckle Huck. But first, an explanation of the events. Superpipe, A fan favorite, this skiing and snowboarding event features a large half-pipe structure with a steep walls for big air and exciting tricks. Slope style. In this event, skiers and snowboarders race down the mountain course that features obstacles like rails, boxes, jumps, and more. Knuckle Huck. This snowboard event features riders using a knuckle or knob of a jump to do tricks rather than hitting the big jump itself. It's a curved section of the crest of a ramp between flat land and steep land ground. For more explanations of X Games events and the history of their inception, visit www.xgames.com/our-history. Meet 4 snowboarders and 5 skiers from Colorado Below. Snowboarders: Ellie Weiler, Highlands Ranch, Women's Snowboard Knuckle Huck. Weiler made her X Games debut in 2024 in the Women's Snowboard Knuckle Huck, impressing with a fifth place finish in the event. Weiler, 22, is a member of GNU Snowboard's team and has been mentored by 8-time X Games gold medalist Jamie Anderson. She claims Highlands Ranch is her hometown, but now lives in Silverthorne, making it easier to train at Copper Mountain and its Westward Copper facilities. Weiler competes in slopestyle and big air on the FIS amateur circuit and got her start in border cross racing when she was younger, according to her profile on xgames.com. Egan Wint, Denver, Women's Snowboard Knuckle Huck. Wint is also coming off her X Games debut in 2024, where she made a splash and finished with a bronze medal in the Women's Snowboard Knuckle Huck event. At 23, Wint is originally from Denver but now resides in Park City, Utah. According to xgames.com, Wint has emerged as a dominant force in the international street and rail jam contest, seen with back-to-back wins at Red Bull Heavy Metal in Detroit in 2023 and 2024, and a 2024 win at DIYX in Stockholm, Sweden. She's also a member of the Dinosaurs Will Die snowboard team. Lucas Foster, Telluride, Men's Snowboard Superpipe. Foster, 25, is back for his 4th X Games appearance in the Men's Snowboard Superpipe event. In his 3 previous X Games competitions, Foster finished 8th in 2023, 5th 2022, and 15th in 2020. Originally from Telluride, Foster now lives in Frisco and frequents Copper Mountain to train. He fell in all 4 of his runs in 2020, which resulted in the 15th place finish, but earned respect by finishing in 5th in his next appearance, according to xgames.com. Foster made history at the 2022 Lax Open in Switzerland, landing a first-in half-pipe competition backslide, 16-20. Red Gerald, Silverthorne, Men's Snowboard Slopestyle. Coming off his first gold medal in the Men's Snowboard Slopestyle event in 2024, Gerald is back for his 11th X Games appearance. The 24-year-old also has a bronze finish in 2020. His breakthrough gold medal last year was due for the Silverthorne native. He won back-to-back slopestyle wins at the Dew Tour at Copper Mountain in 2020 and 2021, has 4 World Cup slopestyle wins, won a slopestyle gold at the 2018 Pyeongchang Olympics at age 17. Before his gold medal in the X Games last year, Gerald finished 4th in 2022 and 2023. Skiers. Aaron Blunk, Crested Butte, Men's Ski Superpipe. One of the more decorated returners, Blunk, 28, is back for his 15th X Game appearance. A specialist in the men's ski superpipe, Blunk finished in 6th last year, 4th in 2023, and won silver medals for all 3 straight years from 2020 to 2022. His best year was in the X Games Aspen 2017 when Blunk won his first and only gold medal. His grandfather started the ski school at Crested Butte Mountain Resort where Blunk began skiing at 18 months old. Hannah Fallhaber, Basalt, Women's Ski Superpipe. Back for her 3rd X Games, Fallhaber is no stranger to Aspen, according to xgames.com. Fallhaber, 20, was born at the Aspen Valley Hospital in 2004, 2 years after the X Games first came to Aspen. In her first X Games appearance in 2022, she finished with a bronze medal in the Women's Ski Super Pipe event. The next year, Fallhaber finished fifth. She is back after missing 2024 with an injury, but is looking for more hardware. She has 5 World Cup podium appearances and is the 2023 world champion in her event. Alex Ferreira, Aspen, men's ski superpipe. The 12-time X Games veteran is back in Aspen after winning gold in the men's ski superpipe last year, marking Ferreira's 3rd gold medal in the event and first since 2020. Ferreira, 30, is the hometown hero from Aspen and is looking to add to his 3 gold, 2 silver, 2 bronze finishes, according to xgames.com. He became the first skier to achieve the perfect season in the half pipe of 2024, winning 7 of 7 competitions, including X Games Gold, 5 World Cups, and the 2024 Dew Tour at Copper Mountain in Summit County. Burke Irving, Winter Park, men's ski superpipe. Joined by his sister Svea, Burke Irving is back for his 8th X Games appearance. Burke, 25, is a 2-time medalist in the men's ski superpipe, winning silver in 2023 and bronze in 2021, both in Aspen. Of his 7 X Games appearances, 6 have been in Aspen. Burke is from Winter Park and recently bought a home in Steamboat Springs. Svea and Burke's grandfather, John Irving, is an American-Canadian writer and novelist. His most famous books, The World According to Garp and The Cider House Rules, have been adapted into award-winning films, starring actors like Robin Williams, Tobey Maguire, and Michael Caine. Svea Irving, Winter Park, Women's Ski Superpipe. Svea Irving, 22, is a 3-time X Games athlete, all in Aspen for the past 3 years. Svea holds 1 bronze medal in the women's ski superpipe from 2023, according to xgames.com. Svea was brought up off the alternate list in 2023 and managed to medal for 3rd place. She also has a 4th place finish in 2024. Svea has 2 World Cup podiums and recently graduated from CU Boulder, where she studied strategic communications. For results from the X Games Aspen 2025, or to follow all these X Games athletes, visit www.xgames.com/events/x-games-aspen-2025. Accompanying photo, Egan Wint from Denver competes during Thayer's Women's Snowboard Knuckle Huck at the 2024 X Games Aspen at Buttermilk Mountain, Aspen. The image shows snowboarders, one doing a handstand, the other holding a camera, following with a camera. Advertisement on this page is Denver Water Lead Reduction Program. Add filtered water. Cook with love. If your home is enrolled in the lead reduction program, be sure to use the water pitcher and filter provided for drinking, cooking, and preparing. Infant formula boiling water does not remove lead, so filter first. Norovirus, whooping cough, cases surge, by Susie Glassman, S. Glassman, at coloradocommunitymedia.com. Colorado is grappling with an increase in norovirus cases this winter, with public health officials urging residents to take proactive steps to prevent its spread. Norovirus, often called the stomach flu or stomach bug, is highly contagious and causes symptoms like vomiting, diarrhea, and stomach cramps. Norovirus normally has a seasonal increase over the winter months, but this season does seem to be hitting a little harder, said Melanie Rogers, a public health nurse and epidemiologist with the Jefferson County Public Health Department. In 2023, we had 23 norovirus outbreaks in Jefferson County. Last year, we saw 57, and this year, since January 1st, we've already registered 8, she said. Denver County Department of Public Health and Environment spokesperson Ryan Money said Denver County has had 13 suspected and or confirmed outbreaks since the start of the year, and Douglas County Health Department's Communications and Public Affairs Director Caroline Frizzell confirmed outbreaks are also on the rise there. If we look at norovirus and undefined gastrointestinal outbreaks, we investigated 10 last season through January 21st and 18 this season thus far, Frizzell said. Adams County Communications Manager Jennifer Lucero Alvarez confirmed there had been 5 norovirus or gastroenteritis outbreaks in schools, childcare and residual care, nursing homes, facilities in January, but said the increase in confirmed cases over the this time last year could be due to fluctuations in reported and increased media coverage. According to the Centers for Disease Control, an outbreak is an unusual increase in illnesses within a specific setting, such as schools, childcare facilities, or long-term care centers. Unlike the seasonal flu and some other viruses, there's no vaccine, and having had norovirus in the past doesn't offer future immunity. Why norovirus is so contagious? Norovirus spreads easily through contaminated food surfaces and air particles, and you often don't know you have it until it's too late to prevent exposing to others. It takes so few particles of norovirus to make someone ill, Rogers said. Once infected, individuals are contagious from the onset of symptoms and for at least 48 hours after recovery. Don't rely on hand sanitizer for protection to keep you safe. Hand sanitizer is actually ineffective against norovirus. It just kind of pushes it around, Rogers said. Proper hand washing with soap and water for at least 20 seconds is the most effective way to prevent infection. This is especially important after using the bathroom, before handling food, and after caring for someone who is ill. It's also vital to clean infected surfaces thoroughly. Since norovirus is resistant to many household cleaners, Rogers said, the CDC recommends using a mixture of bleach and water on countertops and washing fabric at a high temperature. Treatment. For those affected by norovirus, Rogers explained that most cases resolve themselves within 48 hours and can be managed at home with supportive care. Symptoms can also include fever, headache, and body aches, according to the CDC. Rogers said staying hydrated is critical, especially for children and other adults at risk of severe dehydration. She recommends taking a drink with electrolytes and seeing a doctor if symptoms don't improve or you suspect severe dehydration. Whooping cough cases also on the rise. In addition to norovirus, Colorado is seeing an increase in pertussis, or whooping cough, cases. Pertussis is a respiratory illness caused by the bacterium Bordetella pertussis. It's highly contagious and can cause severe coughing fits, making it particularly dangerous for infants and unvaccinated individuals. Pertussis is still raging out there right now, says Rogers. We're seeing outbreaks in schools and childcare facilities, and it hasn't really slowed. While pertussis can affect people of all ages, children and young adults account for many of the reported cases. Vaccination remains the most effective way to protect against pertussis. The CDC recommends routine childhood vaccinations and periodic boosters to maintain protection against the disease. According to Rogers, the body typically develops immunity about 2 weeks after vaccination. For pertussis, early treatment with antibiotics can help reduce the severity of symptoms and prevent further spread. However, prevention through vaccination remains the most effective strategy. An image accompanies of a microscopic norovirus particle. While norovirus cases peak during winter, it remains a year-round threat. Likewise, pertussis outbreaks can occur at any time. Colorado residents can protect themselves and their communities by practicing good hygiene, cleaning thoroughly, and staying up to date with vaccinations. For information on norovirus prevention and disinfection, visit the CDC's Norovirus Prevention and Cleaning Guidelines. To learn more about pertussis and vaccination schedules, consult the CDC's Pertussis Overview. Advertisement on this page. Reverse mortgages made easy. Call me to schedule your free, confidential in-home review of this unique product. Mike Bruja, photos features a photograph of a man in a suit. Mike Bruja, reverse mortgage specialist, NMLS 971223. That's all the time we have today. Thank you for joining us for Denver Metro News, read by Matthew Bell.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.